everyone, and welcome to Kane & Rince Sound of Play 21. With Sound of Play, we bring you an eclectic fortnightly compilation mix, you know it by now, of some of our and your favourite pieces from the many video game soundtracks we've enjoyed over the years. Joining me, Leon Cox, in Sound of Play 21 are Kane & Rince's Joshua Garrity.
Hello there.
And returning guest friend of the show and all-round polymath, I think that's right, Nick Parton.
Hello.
So, Nick, you are a man who actually makes your own music.
I am definitely a man.
Yeah, we can tell by your rich, sonorous voice.
Ah, yes.
But you're a man who actually, as well as enjoying video game music, you've made music. You have made video game music as well, I suppose, haven't you?
Yeah, I had a company called Megadev, and we were around for about 6 years, maybe. And we moved from Flash games eventually to sort of Steam and mobile and stuff. And yeah, my part was the music and all that. And I got to do stylistically, a huge range of stuff from the chiptune style that was very popular. Right through to orchestral stuff. So, yeah,
fantastic.
It was great.
Is there a place people can check out your work? Is there a resource?
There is. For all my professional work, video game work, it's just nickparton.co.uk, and I have a band called Fine Excuses at fineexcuses.co.uk. If people are interested in checking out that side of things as well,
you don't give yourself the hard sell.
No,
he's a very talented man.
I'm too English. English for the hard sell.
Regular listeners to the British podcast scene may well remember Nick's contribution to JoyPod from quite a few years ago now, wasn't it? But you did a little rap under the name of Mr. Tits, a sort of a comedic pseudonym of yours. And it was a rap about JoyPod up to that point. And it was terrific. Really, really, very amusing stuff.
Oh, it was good fun to do. I did enjoy contributing to that show. And for their final one, I did a follow-up rap, which
That's right.
I think was my crowning glory.
Yes,
in the end, it was about 6 minutes long or something ridiculous like that. But
check those out. I'm sure they can be found somewhere, hopefully.
Back in the day.
Yeah, that last one will be on spong.com anyway, if not somewhere else.
Yeah.
So you opened up the show with our first selection for this Sound of Play, and we've featured you as Okashira a couple of times before, but you can never have enough. And, of course, that was the one from Streets of Rage 2 that everybody knows sounds quite a lot like The Shaman.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing, actually. It is, it's a fantastic soundtrack overall. But one thing that strikes me, particularly about chiptune music, is I kind of feel like it's, for me, it was the kind of great leveler in that growing up listening to chiptune music on the C64, Amiga and Mega Drive and SNES, is that I got exposed to all sorts of composers that were drawn lots of different genres. And the fact that it was given to me with a familiar palette of sounds because of the chiptune nature of music, I kind of feel like I took on board a lot more. I was open to a lot more genres than I otherwise would have been. Because
I mean,
certainly, like you say, Under Logic is redolent of The Shaman, and I was definitely not a fan of them at the time.
No.
For those that don't know, it was an early 90s UK sort of dance crew, and so yeah, you've got all these influences in the Bare Knuckle 2 soundtrack of sort of acid house, rave, and just all sorts of electronica, and then on the composers like Rob Hubbard would bring in progressive rock influences, and you'd in the Sonic games you'd get this the kind of light sort of jazz inflected pop, and it's all of this stuff I thought was fantastic, but it. Like I say, it was the fact that it was delivered with a familiar set of kind of instruments that I think sort of predisposed me to take on board all these influences. It's just fantastic soundtrack.
So Yuzo Koshiro obviously did music for not only the Mega Drive, but also the SNES, but he he above almost anyone else managed to get stuff out of that Yamaha YM2612 FM synthesis chip of the Mega Drive than anybody else. His family, we talked about this before, I think, but his family are a kind of a team of coding prodigies, and they sort of made games as a family unit, which is amazing in itself. But he always had a credit on a title screen, and we've seen this recently. The M2's fantastic emulation of Streets of Rage 2 and Bare Knuckle 2, because you can choose your ROM, just come out for the 3DS on the eShop. It's £4 odd, and it's another great excuse to play through Streets of Rage 2 with some cheeky extras and some fun knockabout additions as well. We talked about the entire Bare Knuckle or Streets of Rage trilogy back in Kane and Rince issue 70, so check that podcast out with Sega and Mega Drive fanatic Dan Clark, who's always a fantastic contributor. So always a pleasure. So track two, as is traditional, will come in this show from one of our forum contributors, kaneandrince.com/forum. Go to the Sound of Play folder and look out for the submissions thread. This one comes from Limity 1603, and he says, or she, I don't know, my submission is Woods Remix, as featured in the relatively recent mobile-only game Super Stickman Golf 2. It was written for the first game by Whitaker Trebella, who is responsible for the soundtrack in both Super Stickman golf games, and remixed by Jordan Shidolovsky to appear in the second. I enjoy Super Stickman Golf 2 as a fun little asynchronous game, but most of my enjoyment comes from listening to the music. The music doesn't exactly evoke emotions that I readily associate with a silly mobile golf game, but that, along with the chiptune simplicity, makes the quality of the songwriting stand out even more. Whitaker Trebella there with the original, and that, as we learned from contributor Limity, was remixed by Jordan Shidlovsky. I also love the music to Super Stickman Golf Game, as well as the game itself, is what I'm trying to say. But I love the music so much that I sought out Whitaker Trebella on Twitter and directly said to him, I love the music that you did for Super Stickman Golf. And he was flattered and responsive. And I believe he's also a developer. He makes games as well as music. but it's well worth checking out the entire Super Stickman Golf soundtrack. Obviously, you can listen to it on places like YouTube. But if you've got an Android or iOS device, I thoroughly recommend Super Stickman Golf 2. It is not a straight golf game. It has nods towards golf. It has the core sort of, you know, swing and hit the ball and try to get it in a hole of golf. But the courses are 2D fantasy courses with sticky substances and fans and whirly gigs and goodness knows what. And it's a kind of action puzzle game more than it is a sports game. So if sports games put you off and the word golf puts you off, don't let it put you off Super Stickman Golf too, because there's a really cool, fun game in there with, as you've just heard, a really excellent soundtrack. Next up, we have our friend Josh.
Hello. Now,
this is from a recent game that you reviewed for the site.
Yeah, so the track I'm choosing is from The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. The track is called Steel for Humans, and it was composed by the band Percival, and also the main composer for the game, Markin Prish Bywovich. I might have butchered that name, but I tried my best.
It's not bad, because that's a toughie for us puny Englishers. There's a lot of consonants in one space there for us. Yeah.
But I picked this track because a lot of the music choices in The Witcher 3 are kind of atypical for this genre. A lot of fantasy games go for the kind of, you know, Lord of the Rings kind of orchestral soundtrack where it's big and bombastic. And one of the things I like about The Witcher 3 just in general is how unapologetically it is of that culture, and how you can feel the influence of you know, the folklore and so forth from that part of the world, the Slavic folklore and mythology in the game. But also they've taken that and kind of injected it into the music, drawing from Slavic folk music and giving it its own unique flair for this game. You know, for the battle sequences, which is what Steel for Humans is used for, it's a bit, you know, more energetic and a bit more lively than you'd expect from this genre of music. But it injects those moments with a personality that's really unique. Instead of going for the, you know, the big bombastic orchestra, it ends up feeling a bit more edgy and a bit more dirty, and it reflects the whole tone and feeling of the game. I think it's a fantastic track.
Indeed, short but sweet. That is, of course, from this year's, it's 2015, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, the biggest indie game around, perhaps, from CD Projekt Red. And yes, if you go to the homepage, kanarince.com, and just type in Witcher 3, you'll find Josh's very thoughtful and well-considered review of that game. And one day, who knows, we may even tackle The Witcher series on the main podcast when we've got about 350 hours to spare to play it all. Something very different now. I didn't even know the name of this song until I decided to feature it for this Sound of Play. But amusingly enough, it's called My Dear Friend Rally.
Yeah, it surprised me too, actually.
Now, this is layer upon layer, slice upon slice of ham and cheese, but presented with that delicious earnestness that you associate with mid-90s Japanese coin-ops. This is from the same stable as Daytona, of course. And I think, although this song is credited as being written by Kenneth Ibrahim and Tetsuya Mitsuguchi, of course, one of the lead designers on the game, Sega Rally Championship 1995, I've seen various credits, so I'm not entirely sure about this. I don't know if there are any Super Sega fans out there who can confirm, but I've seen it listed as the composer also being Takanobu Mitsuyoshi, but he's also credited as a vocalist. Now, I think Mitsuyoshi is the guy behind a lot of the famous Daytona USA music, Rolling Start and, you know, Blue Blue Skies and all that sort of stuff. But on the official soundtrack album, there's also a credit for vocal by Naoki Takao. So forgive my ignorance, but hopefully it won't affect your enjoyment of this astonishing piece of middle of the road light jazz funk that just evokes those blue skies, and indeed that particularly slip slidey feel of the original Sega Rally Championship, with its massive selection of four tracks, which seemed perfectly reasonable for your 40 to 50 quid back in the mid 90s. Obviously playing it, you know, it was born in the arcades and in 1994, and you know, the thought of getting to the end of the three tracks that I think were present in the arcade machine, because I think the fourth track, Lakeside, was a home only exclusive, as I recall. But yes, this game was for many, many years often cited by various magazines and outlets as being, you know, one of the greatest racing games ever made. And I think in the modern market it would struggle to complete, but if you go back and play it now, it has an enormous amount of charm and that completely infectious, joyful quality that these Sega arcade races did, that hopefully we'll get a taste of with the forthcoming sort of ode to those 90s arcade racer, the independent game that's coming out for the Wii U at some stage, hopefully, and I suspect will come out on other formats after that for financial reasons. But anyway, check these lyrics out. You can Google them. For years, I thought it was "Feel the heartbeat of the line," and in the chorus. Then I read it as "Feel the heartbeat at the line." I thought, well, that kind of makes more sense. But it turns out it's actually a very strange pronunciation of "Feel the heartbeat of the land." Obviously, because you're a rally driver, so you're kind of at one with the environment. Anyway, there's some truly excellent lines and English pronunciations in here, so do enjoy.
Been new.
track.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we were lucky enough to get a really fine version of Daytona USA on Xbox Live Arcade a few years back, and probably PSN as well, but I have the 360 version, which has all the music and it has the karaoke mode and all that sort of thing. But they didn't do it for Sega Rally. With Sega Rally, we got these sort of the modern versions by Sega Racing Studio and the things that came out of that, which are fun enough games in their own right, I feel, but they don't have the same, that magical vibe of Sega Rally. Sega Rally was a game which came up recently on a Twitter conversation. We were talking about, on the release of Tembo the Badass Elephant, we were talking about games with elephants in, and as well as the obvious Street Fighter 2, there's also some rather lovely elephants in Sega Rally, so look out for those.
Fantastic.
Now, back further in time to the twilight years of the Commodore 64, but actually that was a period of incredible sort of creativity from the remaining Commodore 64 coders and musicians, wasn't it, Nick?
Mm. Yeah, to be fair, I mean, at the end of the Commodore 64's life, coders were doing things that I think even the original designers of the C64 didn't think was possible.
For sure.
And I suppose, once again, it's fair to say that machines these days, in their life cycle, they probably don't reach that point before a new generation supersedes them. This particular track is from Creatures 2, which was released in 1992 by a brother trio called Apex Computer Productions. And I kind of feel like the brother that did the music, Steve Rowlands, when you end up doing sort of an 8-bit list of the most well-regarded composers, he seems to often be left off, say, in favour of the sort of usual suspects like Tim Follin, Rob Hubbard, Jeroen Tel, Chris Hulsbeck. And I wonder if that's because they were around in the twilight days of the C64's life. Mm. And although another title of theirs, Mayhem in Monsterland, is actually remembered quite fondly and has ended up on the virtual console. I think that was not really his best work. It's the Creatures and Creatures 2, I think, have some absolutely fantastic tunes. Once again, like I said earlier with Under Logic, they took aspects of sort of hip-hop, you know, thumping beats and big sort of... huge bass lines and incorporated them into the tracks from the game. And they're just kind of instant ear candy to me. And this particular one is used on what's called a torture screen.
I've forgotten about these.
Yeah. It's a very graphically, it's a very cute sort of blue skies sort of game. But at a certain point, you would find one of your friends kind of captured in some sort of Rube Goldberg-esque sort of creation, which if you didn't solve a number of minor puzzles to stop it, it would result in your friend's usually bloody and entertaining death. And this particular one features your friend being roasted over an open fire. And it's the final torture.
And this sick filth.
Yes, exactly. If only the Daily Mail had seen that. And this is the final torture screen of the second game. And it's just, it's all tension. It just builds and builds and builds. And it was an instant favourite when I heard it.
We'll be right back. That's smashing. We always like some Sid Chip on Sound of Play. We often seem to get it from guests, certainly guests of a certain age, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah. I know,
you're younger than me anyway, I'm sure. But yes, it means such a lot to so many of us who were there during the 8-bit wars. Takes
and,
us right
and
back.
And wars they were.
They were, sadly, yes. Yeah. I'm quite glad in hindsight that the internet wasn't around then, because the whole Spectrum Amstrad Commodore 64 thing would have been even more annoying and unpleasant than it was. It would be like it is now. Just completely pointless and
a nightmare flame war.
Yes, indeed. Next up, we have another community request or contribution, however you prefer to look at it. This is from our friend Ideology Light, who wants a track from Lost Odyssey. He says, I'm not sure if the title of the song is some kind of translation error, as the mood of the piece is clearly very different to what the title implies. Either way, it's one of my favourite ever tracks from Uematsu, and the sadness of the piece is amplified by how few people have played Lost Odyssey and actually heard it. Despite the Final Fantasy pedigree behind the game, I like how the song actively seems to bypass the grandeur of the FF soundtracks in favour of something more intimate and sparse, with only the occasional orchestral swell. A beautiful game and a beautiful song. This is Demon Invasion by Nobuo Uematsu. So from Lost Odyssey there, a game that we have a number of people on the Kena Rinse team who would love us to make a podcast about that game, but possibly not enough to actually make it a show just yet. We've had a lot of discussions recently among the team and among our community on the forum, on Twitter and so on, about the sort of difficulties of us tackling longer games such as RPGs because of the nature of Kena Rinse. We all commit to finishing each game, and obviously in among all our other commitments that can be quite tricky to do, but rest assured we are always thinking about ways to cover games such as Lost Odyssey. We'd love to do some Final Fantasies, we'd love to do Grandia games, we'd love to do Tales games. We've had many requests for East games, although I don't think anyone on the team has ever played any of them. Obviously we've done some Persona, we're going to be doing some more. We've done The Last Story, there will be more, but you'll have to bear with us on that for obvious reasons, the format being what it is and our schedule being what it is. We have a lot of deadlines to meet, so do bear with us. Knights of the Old Republic may happen at some point. So that was from quite a while ago now, 2007 originally, but a few years before that even. Josh, you brought one of the tracks from one of your all-time Epic Shelf favorite games.
Yeah. So the game is Half-Life 2, which we covered on issue 56 of Kane and Rince.
That's right.
The track is CP Violation, and it's by Kelly Bailey. And I really chose this track because I needed Kelly Bailey to be on Sound of Play at some point, because I think not just in terms of composition, but sound design in general, Kelly Bailey is just up there with my absolute favorites in the field.
Agreed.
Half-Life 2 especially, just some of the sound effects and the music, they invade my dreams and my nightmares. And I can think of very few sound designers that have had that impact on me, where the sounds they've created have invaded my life outside of the game that they were involved in. The music, especially, one of the things that's so unique about the Half-Life 2 soundtrack, or at least it doesn't happen enough in my eyes, is that the music feels very much in sync with the sound design. This track in particular, CP Violation, it plays during the root canal section, where you're going through the train tracks and stuff like that. And it feels like the trains going by and all of those sound effects, they feel like they're almost part of this track. Now, I think this track works very well in isolation. I think it's a great piece of music. But hearing it in context with all the other sound effects that Kelly Bailey's created along with it, it just becomes this kind of really magical kind of... it's really hard for me to describe, because I'm not a musician and I'm not a sound designer. So a lot of this just comes off as magic to me. And just the way he has constructed the soundscape of certain areas in Half-Life 2, and particularly this area, just come together in a way that just sends the hairs on the back of your spine, you know. It makes them tingle and what have you. It's just, it's really, really effective. So this is CP Violation by Kelly Bailey.
Another short one, but another cracker. That's Half-Life 2 is one of the games that I've completed multiple times, which is not that many games. There are some games that I will just play through over and over.
Yeah,
we talked about why that might be back in that Kane and Rince issue 56. We also talked about Half-Life a few issues before that, and the episodes, Half-Life 2 episodes 1 and 2, a few podcasts after that. So you can check those out. One day we'll do a Half-Life 3 podcast.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. Right. back to me, and we're back in the arcades of the 90s, unsurprisingly enough. I've recently very much fallen back in love with Street Fighter. Not that I ever fell out of love with Street Fighter, but there's been a lot of stuff going on around Street Fighter recently. We had Evo for 2015. We've had the Ultra Street Fighter 4 release for PS4, which arrived a little bit shaky, but it's since been patched a couple of times by Other Ocean, and it's now absolutely sublime. It doesn't feel like a shonky port anymore. It feels like a really dang cracking version of one of the essential fighting games. But my favorite games in the whole of the Street Fighter series, and I have been playing them since the start, not very well, but I have been playing them. The Street Fighter Zero trilogy, Street Fighter Alpha, if you prefer. I just adore everything about them. The art is just sensational, I found. It had a lot of my favorite music from the series, hence we're here. And I still think that Street Fighter Zero 2 just feels to me like the most complete vision for Street Fighter. It's just got so many nice touches and such fantastic gameplay and such a feel that not even the Mighty Ultra can quite match for me, as much as I adore that game. Now, I've never been a Rose player at all as a character, but this soundtrack for her, which debuted in the first Street Fighter Zero in 1995 by Yuko Takahara, is just hugely thrilling, I find. I was never that into the Street Fighter music for the first few years, and there were, like, I remember Mean Machines giving away a CD with some stage tracks on, and I was like, I'm not really feeling it. But as the time's gone on and these tracks have become more and more iconic, and they've been remixed and remastered and changed for every different CPS chip, and then different versions of the game arranged for home console releases on CD and so on, I've become sort of got more into it. And but this track is definitely one of my favorites from the era. Takahara is a veteran Capcom composer. She worked on the SNES version of Aladdin, which people will know. I think that was the Shinji Mikami game. She's also done a lot of Mega Man stuff, Breath of Fire stuff, and she's just clearly a hugely talented composer. And as you will hear from this there's an element of the prog in this, but I suppose it was supposed to evoke this sort of Italian magic user. Anyway, see what you think. Rose's theme, which sort of cascades up and cascades down and goes all around, and makes me very excited. I remember the graphics for Rose's stage, because famously on Street Fighter Alpha 1, there weren't that many stages. Alpha 1 felt like a bit of a proof of concept for what became Alpha 2. But Alpha 2 had way more stages, including Rose's, which had this most beautiful sprite art ship in the background, which, still a game that I put on and play from time to time. Anyway, enough about me and Street Fighter. We'll no doubt feature more Street Fighter in the future. And here's a name that you mentioned earlier. One of the legends. We featured him before on Sound of Play, and I'm sure we will again. Over to you, Nick.
Yes, we're taking, once again, a trek back even further in time than Leon's choice, back to 1985, and this is the main theme to Monty on the Run by Rob Hubbard. I mean, this, I was never much good at the game as a kid. It was a very, very difficult game and very tightly designed, but I would regularly load the game up just to sit and listen to the music. And the music, the piece is about 7 minutes long. So there was a lot to listen to, you know, featuring a full-on Sid Chip guitar solo right in the middle. And it was just, it was just crescendo after crescendo, a fantastic piece of music. But many years later, I learned that the piece was actually quite heavily based on a piece of music from 1948 called The Devil's Gallop by a guy called Charles Williams. And I think it's probably a piece you'd recognize if you heard it, because it was used in quite a lot of TV shows. But interestingly, the first show it was used in was a BBC radio drama that was broadcast, once again, in the late 1940s to early 1950s, about a secret agent called Dick Barton.
Yes.
Now, considering my name is Nick Parton, that seems like a very odd...
I mentioned this to you a while back. Do you remember this?
Oh.
I called you Special Agent Nick Parton.
Oh, and that was a reference, was it?
That was a reference to Dick Barton. Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't twig, because, I mean, this is something that I found out a couple of years ago. And I just thought it was the most bizarre coincidence.
I assumed your parents were fans.
You never know. Maybe they were. They saw the opportunity for some kind of off-the-wall gag and just went for it with the birth certificate. But nonetheless, though, I mean, as a piece, this really is, you know, it's up there in my top five tunes of all time, sort of retro or not. So I kind of felt like I had to include it if I ever got on a Sound of Play. This is Monty on the Run.
So before we hear from Rob, the mighty Rob Hubbard, and his Monty on the Run, as you've heard once again, it's not just about what we like, what our contributors like, our guests, that is. It's also about what you, the listener, like. So please continue to venture over to our forum at canerince.com, and that's where you can request your favourites. It doesn't even have to be your favourites. It could be some kind of fascinating oddity that we've yet to feature. Anything interesting, especially anything with a story behind it or nuggets of trivia, we're always up for that. We'll continue to include a selection of those in the playlist for each and every show. One thing we haven't been saying on Sound of Play that we really ought to is please do, especially if you use that whole iTunes thing. I know everybody hates it, but everybody uses it. Not everybody. Lots of people use it. We really could do with some more iTunes reviews and ratings for Sound of Play. We always ask for them on the main podcast, and we've got a very healthy amount of fairly positive reviews for Kane and Rince. But for Sound of Play, we're sorely lacking. Listenership is increasing, but our reviews are only slowly creeping up. It really helps our profile. And obviously, you know, people are more likely to look to a podcast that has more five-star ratings or whatever you want to give us. It's entirely your choice. Than one that hasn't. So please head over to iTunes and give us a rating there. It just remains for me, Leon, to thank Josh. And I can't believe, Josh, we got this far without me mentioning the fact that I perfected you on Street Fighter Online the other night.
Yeah.
I appear to have managed to slip that in. And and Nick, have you got anything else you want to plug, your Twitter account or anything you like?
Well, my Twitter account is at Fine Excuses. I think the last time I was on here, I plugged my podcast Just Add Idiots, but it's so ridiculously infrequent. It's probably not worth doing this time.
You need a level of discipline to do it regularly. Come on.
There is no discipline there.
Crack the whip. crack your own whip.
Maybe I should.
Well, it's out there anyway, so people can catch up with older Just Add Idiots's anyway, can't they? So
indeed.
New listeners, lots of old shows. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for coming on again. We'll have you on again. There's no limit to the amount of times people can come on Sound of Play. Game music fans always have to whittle it down to three, and that's really hard. So we'll have you back, and you can have a few more choices at some point in the future.
Thanks for inviting me on.
No problem. And thanks again, as always, of course, to our community contributors. And yes, without further ado, here is Rob Hubbard, and we'll see you on Sound of Play 22.